whole setup. Now you'll see those type of things fly again on the Space Launch System a couple of years from now. Once NASA starts launching that big 10 million pound thrust rocket, that rocket will also have two massive solid booster rockets attached to it, similar to the space shuttle, but longer. You know, instead of having four segments, it's going to have, so it'll be able to fly for a longer period of time. So we'll see those things again. But in, you know, on those flights, those will not be reusable. Will not be reusable. Back to you.
The first 100,000 feet of getting one of these launch vehicles off the ground requires tremendous amounts of fuel, energy, thrust, whatever. And there seems to be no getting around that. There's some proposals to make some kind of a winged vehicle to get you the first 100,000 feet and then take off with a rocket after that. I think that's too elaborate. There's too much conversion required. The space elevator is nice on paper, but for a long time to come, unless somebody makes a sudden breakthrough in strength of materials, way beyond graphite reinforced, you just don't have enough strength to make a space elevator. So a space elevator, we're not hearing much about it anymore. It makes nice science fiction, but I don't think we're ever going to see one of those. Let me drop them. Although maybe somebody else in another solar system, one of the exoplanets, has discovered it. So Paul, I'm half kidding here. You may have heard that in the last couple of weeks, they've discovered in the subsequent Kepler data that was analyzed by human beings, not by a computer program, they found a exoplanet assembly, a star with planets going around it, where the shapes of the occultation are spiky. They don't look right. So, has that civilization put up a Dyson sphere made out of their super material that's way better than graphite reinforced materials? I wonder if you heard about that one, Paul. There's the star that has this very funny, repetitive, slightly random but repetitive shape of light being decreased, and it doesn't have the characteristic U shape. It's a spiky shape, like, the spike is too fast. There's no known mechanism by which the star itself could change its brilliance that deeply, that fast. WS2N, K2IW, did you hear about that one, Paul?
I wonder if that's a different story than the one Rich N2EL brought up probably about 6 months ago. Name of the star, you want to see, I forget the name of the star, and they thought maybe the comets were involved, or is this a different story than that one, or something new?
Yeah, this one I think is only known for about a month or so, and the lady who discovered it, the star is being given her name plus a very long number. I'm hearing somebody else in there with some information. Who was that?
That was AC2LR, this is K. I thought you were talking about Travis.
Give me a full name and tell me what you know about that particular star, K.
Pretty much what Paul said, that it was been talked about over the past couple of months, and I think I did hear Rich bring it up about 6 months ago. Is that you, Rich?
Okay, Brett, it's up 6 months ago. What's it that was brought up? Okay, go ahead.
The TRAPPIST star. Actually, no, maybe it was more like 2 or 3 months ago. TRAPPIST star, they just found a bunch of exoplanets going around it, and it was stational. I can't remember why. Paul, do you remember what was it that was so special about the exoplanets going around this particular star? Oh, they were Earth-like. I'm not sure how they knew that, but that was the excitement. Back to you, Dick.
And Dick, I got something to say about this. I remember we were talking about it.
Yeah, we're not talking about the Earth-like ones now. I know about those. There is a star that's got two or three planets in the Goldilocks zone, and they're approximately Earth-sized. That's not what we're talking about. In the last month or so, by manual techniques, non-computer techniques, some people investigating the Kepler data found a very unusual star, but they're having a lot of difficulty explaining it because it's a change in illumination versus time. It doesn't follow the right curve. And yet they can't figure out what it is. So maybe you haven't heard about this one, Paul. And I'll have to mail you some an email address when I find it again. WS2N, K2RIW.
Yeah, I don't know that story. I know the one that Kay was talking about. Travis, that's it. Thanks, Kay. I knew it began with the letter T, but I had forgotten. Yeah, that was the one that made a lot of news. Could have been a Dyson set up, some civilization building this thing. But, just go back to the elevator, the space elevator. Recently, Popular Science had a special edition, The Future of Space Travel, and that was one of the topics. And after reading that, you could really cross the space elevator off the list. Thought they'd be able to make it out of carbon fiber and all of this. Looks like that research is unable to produce what they really need to make something that strong. I think, according to that article in Popular Science, it was across the list. A while back, you gave out, I don't know, maybe it was Popular Science, a magazine that had a lot of space-related technology in it. I wonder if it was that one or a different one, Scientific American or something. But the one I'm talking about is about a month or two ago, about in Popular Science. A lot of good articles, SpaceX and all, and they also have the space elevator. Back to you.
Yeah, I wish I had brought my latest issue of Scientific American into the shack. It's got a fair amount of space information in the latest issue. Is that where I saw the article on this crazy shape of the dimming of the star, the spiky dimming shape? Not sure. In the case of the space elevator, getting materials that are strong enough and long enough, you want a 60,000 mile length of graphite reinforced filament. And that's essentially out of the question. You need a hell of a lot more length, a hell of a lot more strength. And even when you put that up, it still has this huge vulnerability. You got this thing that's essentially attached to the surface of the Earth near the equator. It goes out there to a very heavy weight at almost twice the synchronous orbit altitude. And a hurricane coming along could destroy it. A tornado could destroy it. An aircraft hitting it could destroy it. A lightning bolt hitting it could probably destroy it. Because no matter how you make that, it's going to be partially conductive. So it's going to take a huge cost and a huge amount of effort to establish it. And it's got so darn many failure mechanisms. A beautiful theory on paper, but I'm being led to believe that we're not going to see that one for quite a long period of time. A good space elevator. It would save us an awful lot of launch cost. But my goodness, is that difficult. Over you, Paul, K2RIW.
Yeah, that's always different ideas coming out at different times. I saw something a while back for the people that don't think that the space elevator is possible. I had a good idea. Take a long tether type, many, many miles long tether, and have an orbiting satellite as the center of the tether. And this thing revolves around the center satellite that's flying around in orbit. So as the end of it comes around toward Earth, have a hyperbolic spacecraft, but, you know, a spacecraft that could be flying, you know, using oxygen in the air to get to hyperbolic speeds, like, you know, 5 times the speed of sound. And as this cable comes along, you attach to it, and then because this thing is spinning, it can grab your spacecraft and now it's pulling you up. You're almost in a vacuum anyway, and it will pull you up, and then it could let you go at a certain point. Now you can be in orbit. I mean, there are really far-fetched ideas, and at least that one has some kind of feasibility, possibility. It doesn't have this long thing attached to the Earth. It's just got this spinning tether going around and around. That was pretty wild. Back to you, Dick.
I don't think anyone has figured out how you establish the cable for the space elevator. Once it's attached to the Earth and goes out there to its counterweight at the, let me pick a number, 40,000 miles above the surface of the Earth, once it's established, in theory, it looks stable as long as it doesn't get hit with an airplane or a tornado or a ship, if it happens to be tethered out at sea. And on top of that, it's going through a whole lot of low Earth, medium Earth, and high Earth orbits. All of those satellites orbit around the Earth. All you need is one of them to strike the space elevator cable, and you're getting an awful lot of damage of both. So it's got some nasty failure mechanisms. You'd have to have an extremely good radar system looking at all the stuff in space, and the tether on the Earth would have to be a ship that moves periodically to steer the darn thing away from the things that are about to strike it. Let me drop
40,000 miles, Dick. Number.
So, once it's established, it looks stable. But how in the world do you establish it? I guess you would start off with a very heavy synchronous orbit satellite. You start extending a cable up and a cable down simultaneously at just the right rate to keep them balanced. But the one going down is never going to go straight down. It's going to curve either ahead or behind. I can't forget which way it is. So to establish it in the first place, I don't think I've read a good article telling you how to do that. They just jump into the assumption that it has been established. And once it's established, tethered to the Earth and get the proper counterweight out there, then after that it holds itself together as long as it's not hit with a satellite or a tornado or an airplane. Do you remember seeing anybody explaining how you actually establish it, Paul? And by the way, this swinging thing that you described, boy, that sounds difficult. WS2N, K2IW.
Not 40.
Up, there's a lot of ideas, and, you know, some of them are bizarre, but some of them have some feasibility to it. But it's going to be, we're not going to live to see that here, and won't really work on the moon. I don't think the moon's spinning fast enough, rotating fast enough. So, I mean, at least you wouldn't be fighting the atmosphere on the moon. You're not going to see that. I don't believe that I've ever seen how, you know, anybody could possibly come up with something like that. They make it seem like the hardest thing is, how are you going to propel the ship up and down? Like you said, it's already built. How are you going to make this vehicle go up and down the side? You know, are you going to use lasers? Are you going to use maglev systems? You know, they make it seem like that's the hard part of design. But you're right, the hard part of this design is actually building this structure, the enormous structure on Earth, to hold this thing, and then having something that would be able to mechanically hold itself together all the way to 20,000 miles up in the air. Back to there.
The ordinary trade winds and other various winds on the Earth, which don't really blow steadily, and they blow at various speeds. speeds and directions at various altitudes. It's going to be twisting the living daylight out of that cable. The cable is going to have to be a fairly wide ribbon in order to be able to easily crawl up the thing. And that ribbon is going to have some tremendous wind load in certain directions. So the wind is going to disturb it, tornadoes, hurricanes, aircraft, satellites, and lightning. Other than that, there's no problem.
Question, Dick?
By the way, John, I kept forgetting to ask you. I sent you very late last night 3 emails. I hope you've got some of them. But go ahead with your question. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Yes, Dick, I got them. I could not open the file for the photograph that Andy sent you. But the watch looks ideal. They have several models. I see them. They're basically the same, but different colors and stuff like that. But the price is quite reasonable. I think it was $169, something like that. But, yeah, the hands are only white at the tips. But it still looks readable.
Yeah, I'm looking at the watch right now. The hands are silvered with paint on the tips that's supposed to glow in the dark. But the photograph you see is not a good photograph. They got too much glare off the crystal. Your eye doesn't see that glare. The contrast of the hands against the black background are a hell of a lot better than the photographs show. Sorry to hear that you couldn't open the email. The attachment that was done by Andy, HUH, I think it was. Anyhow, it is the October 2011 issue of Limock Log. 2011, you went to a flea market. I think it's the October issue on page 8. It's got your picture. Maybe there's a way I can select just the picture and mail you that much, which is not the way that it was shipped to me. And did you see also that that head cooling mechanism for chemotherapy? Oh, you, John, K2RIW?
Yes, I opened that up and I wrote down the 2 addresses that they have to view that. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, and I was talking to my daughter about it because I want to talk to the oncologist also, which she may know even more about it. So I'll get to look at that maybe tomorrow.
So I think you're saying that when it comes to the real good-looking diesel watch, only one model number, the DZ1117, is the only one I like the looks of. None of the others has the big face with high contrast. I didn't find another one that comes even close to the particular one that I shipped you a picture of, John, go ahead.
Yeah, I like the picture that came up first, the main picture that they show you. Then I looked at the other ones which were below it. I didn't like the color combinations or the band colors, things like that, but I did see that feature on the band that you were talking about.
Hold on now, John. The picture that I sent to you has got a main picture of the watch and then 3 little watches below it, which are the exact same watch, just viewed at different angles. It's the exact same watch with the exact same model number. On the page that I mailed you, John, go ahead.
To me, they look like they were different color. The bezels looked, I'm going to have to review that because those pictures that were below were not attractive at all. I wouldn't want that watch. But the main picture that came up, it was an extremely good-looking watch. I like the style of the case. All the cases are basically the same style. But, I'll double-check that.
Yeah, the 3 slightly smaller pictures, slightly below the one main picture, are the exact same watch at slightly different angles of photography. The main picture, you only see it face straight on.
Repeater, time out.
You only see it straight on, and the watch band looks completely black. The other 2 are tilted at an angle to the right and to the The other two are tilted to the right and to the left, and now you see the back side of the watch band, which is tan colored, but that's going to be against your skin, so nobody sees that. You saw the mechanism by which the watch holds itself against your wrist without rolling around your wrist. And so the other ones, the lighting is such that they got such a tremendous difference in the glare off the crystal. It looks like a different model of watch. It is not a different model. So when you go back and study that, you may eventually realize that, John. Go ahead.
All right. I'll double check that. Interesting. Usually I'm good at that, and I missed that totally.
So from what you see, it's kind of peculiar. When you start going through the stop process of actually giving them your credit card number and whatever, it's hard to make sure you've got it into the HTTPS, the secure mode. It appears that they charge you nothing for shipping, which seems strange. And the first price that you see is New Zealand dollars, not American dollars. American dollars, it takes less of them. But even if you pay the full number, I still think if you like the watch enough, it's worth it. So it sounds like you might consider that particular watch. Too bad you and I don't meet face to face. I could actually show it to you, the real thing, if you know what I mean. KQIW, got it, John.
No, it's quite attractive, this style. I like it. I'm going to buy it probably next week. I'll get on that. And, you know, you don't pay shipping, and you're getting the dollar exchange that the whatever the rate is, but then they charge you for foreign currency purchase. Have you seen that on your credit cards? Isn't that a charm?
No, I haven't bought anything from a foreign government yet on my credit card. So, this is you've seen on other purchases, or have you seen it with the diesel company? Yeah, go ahead.
No, I don't know about the diesel company, but from what I understand, I've had to pay it on a few orders, but that's by the credit card company because they want to get paid for doing the exchange rate. It's not much, but it could be like $10, $15, something like that. They call it a foreign currency exchange fee.
That wouldn't bother me very much, but it's really sad that this company with the name Diesel in Australia seems to still have a few of these things in the warehouse. From all I can tell, that exact model number was discontinued a large number of years ago. Bad move, as I see it, because I haven't found anything that's quite like it. Over to you, John.
Yeah, and for the price, and it keeps good time, as you stated, I think that's a good purchase, and it's not that expensive. And if you notice, the original price, I think, was $385, something like that.
Well, maybe that's their price because they think they've got the last of the Mohicans. When the watch was still being produced, and I bought it the very first time, somewhere around 2004, 2005, I'm not quite sure the exact year, I think the price was like $75. How are you, John? Get your eyes, have you?
Wow, yeah, that's a super buy. And you can't buy much for $75 when you talk about watches, you know, unless you want to talk about Timex, something like that. But decent watches are a little pricey.
Doesn't come close to a Rolex, or what's that other one, Flipper? I'll have to look up a Flipper. That's a brand new brand name to me, John. Go ahead.
Pate Filippi.
That's the real name. Okay. Is that French or Swiss?
French, from what I understand, yes. But I believe it's made in Switzerland.
And it's a brand that's been around a while, I take it. It has existed for, let's say, 50 years. Rolex. I bet you if somebody told me that Rolex has been around 75 years, I'd believe it.
That's an interesting question. I don't know. When I was younger, very young, I never heard of them. But, yeah, Flippy's been around for probably 100 years.
If you saw 60 Minutes tonight, the very first of the three stories was a political person, I think he was a governor, who went through three courts in a row being sued and losing his case for corruption. He finally brought it to the Supreme Court and got it turned over after three previous cases. And the Supreme Court came to the conclusion that they don't agree with it, but that's the way government normally does business. But of all the gifts that he got during this collusion, these illegal things of value that he was given, one or two of them were Rolex watches. Go ahead.
Yeah, nice gift. Like I say, quite ostentatious. But they make some simple watches too. I think like the Navigator or something like that, some kind of nautical name. But they're rather plain. But this one's just ridiculous.
One of the things we ought to check on is the watch that you're about to buy, that I already own. Is there a way to buy a spare watch band? Unless you're a lot more gentle than I am, you will discover that within about 2 years, the watch band itself will fail. And there seems to be no good way of buying a replacement watch band. It's very wide. The place where the spring clip is I think, 24 millimeters wide. And that's a very unusual size. Go ahead.
Well, maybe I'll inquire with the company if I can get a spare band and be prepped for it. They may have them.
It's worth a try. And if the answer is yes, buy two of them. Okay. Anybody got any further questions on all of the above? Let's see now. There was one other thing. Oh! One of the things I was going to bring to your attention, when it comes to things like Voyager and Pioneer and all these many spacecraft that go 2, 3, 4, 5 planets away from Earth, almost all of them don't have anywhere near enough thrust to get up to the right speed to get far enough out on pure rocket power. Almost all of them do a slingshot maneuver with other planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, for instance. And the method by which you fly a satellite, a spacecraft, near a planet, and why you can use it to redirect your satellite, your spacecraft to some other angle, that's a little bit obvious. Let me drop it. But depending on how you fly it, either on the back side of the planet or the front side of the planet, you can use the planet to give you a huge increase in velocity or a huge decrease in velocity. When you fly by another planet, when you do what's called a gravity assist, if you just simply Google the word gravity assist and find the Wikipedia article on that, boy, there's real magic there. So I wonder how familiar you are with these fly-by maneuvers and how it gives you a huge increase. Voyager would never be anywhere near where it is in the timing where it is. I mean, I think it managed to get almost twice the velocity in half the time to get where it is right now by way of those flybys. So at first it seems like magic. I wonder how familiar you are with that ball. WS2N, K2RIW.
K2UPN.
Now, Rich recognized, but Paul first, then we're going to go over to Rich. Go ahead, Paul.
Didn't really bother with it until he got. Didn't do any flybys of Earth. The horizon went past Jupiter. They picked up, I think it was 8,000 miles per hour just by getting past Jupiter. And, you know, it comes around the backside of it. And he's going to get the forward motion of Jupiter going around the sun. That's really the effect of it. And then when you take missions like what was it, Magellan mission that went to Venus. They would go on the inside of the planet and be floating stuff down on the inner planet. One that went to Mercury. That one also, I think it had a couple of flybys of Venus, slow itself down, drop.
And also a couple of flybys of Mercury before they finally went into orbit around Mercury.
More important for some of these missions. Ulysses, they needed a polar orbit around the sun. You know, they wanted to go around the North Pole and the South Pole. This state is the only one that's ever done that. To do that, they had to go out to Jupiter. They went to the South Pole of Jupiter, and you know, on the way out, and that changes direction. Very, very important. They did that with Juno. They went over the top. They went over the North Pole of Jupiter to get into a polar orbit around Jupiter, where Galileo orbiting Jupiter for 6 years. That was on an equatorial orbit. They didn't have to do that. Back to you.
Rich, take to Uncle Papa Sierra. Which state are you in tonight? And go ahead with your question or comment, Rich. K2RIW.
K2UPS Mobile. Good evening, Dick. I'm in Pennsylvania right now. I'm, down on the Pennsylvania Turnpike heading home. Just some information on the two watch companies. Rolex was founded in 1905, and it's based in Switzerland. And Patek Philippe was founded in 1851. However, there was also a Patek Zapek, C-Z-A-P-E-K, that was founded in 1839. So that's slightly older, but I guess different partners. But Patek Philippe was started in 1851, also based in Switzerland.
Fantastic. How many of these watches do you own, Rich? And I think to you a basset is more valuable than a watch, but maybe I don't know. We'll soon find out. And that Pate Philippe, I think that's been described to me as a super thin watch. And I guess some people really get excited about a watch being super thin. That characteristic scares me. I'm afraid that I would sit on it the wrong way and bend it. K2UPS, K2RIW.
W2HO. W2HO recognized. Well, I don't have any Rolex or fancy watches. However, I have purchased, and I think I'm still paying it off, a Rolex that was a present for my son, and he loves wearing it. And never takes it off, which is a good thing. And there is a Patek Philippe that my father owns. He got it as a wedding present. And it's a beautiful watch. I think he's only had it serviced maybe twice, and I was just to have it, you know, cleaned and lubricated. Don't know if it's still around, but there was a Pushkin jeweler in Franklin Square or Garden City, I believe. Don't know if they're still around at all, but it's a nice watch, right, Ben? It's a nice watch. So, but they've been around for a while. So that's back to men.
Okay, the other person was that Whiskey 2 Hotel Lima. If so, I think that's Howard. Go ahead, HL.
Yeah, this is Howard. Good evening to everybody. Hello, Dick. I fancy myself a little bit of a watch collector as one of my hobbies I'm doing for a while. An orologist is a word that some people go by. I just wanted to mention that I don't know if you did mention, because you could talk about Rolex. Rolex gives, I think, a considerable amount of its profits to charity. I wanted to just add that.
Unusual company. Howard, where is Rolex located? I guess it could be Switzerland. Is that true?
I don't know exactly, but I think the corporate headquarters is located on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. Of course, their manufacturing is done in Switzerland.
Let's see now. Fort Chilton. You and Barry into Moonbounce. do get together periodically, is that true?
Yeah. Matter of fact, he was over my house yesterday and my antenna fell down with the windstorm, lightning storm we had the other night. G5RV had put up a telescopic mast on the chimney, which has helped me considerably. And it's been doing a good job. Yeah, nice to meet Barry, N2MB. See him quite often.
That's good phonetics. Nice to meet Barry. I can tell you're mobile. I'm hearing you very well on the input, Howard. You must be running a medium amount of power from your vehicle, is that true?
I'm using a standard, a tri-band here. It's on the 50-watt setting. Probably about 40 to 50 watts, if I'm lucky.
And is it a 5/8 wave mag mount that I'm listening to?
I believe it is, a Comet.
That's doing a good job. Okay. Anyone with any further questions or comments on all of the above? If not, I'm going to start closing down. K2RIW TechNet, we're listening.
And 2APG.
Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, Dick. I just wanted to mention, I did a quick search on eBay. The 24mm diesel watch bands, they're available.
Okay. You found on eBay a watch band intended for a diesel watch, 24mm width, and did it say it's a direct replacement for the diesel Delta Zebra 1117? Over to you, Dave.
No, I didn't have that model number handy to do a search. I just did a generic search for diesel watch band 24mm. Came up, there's a rubber type watch band. It's about $15 available.
Thank you. That's a good find. I did find a watch band of the right width, but it wasn't an exact replacement. It didn't have the extra thickness in the vicinity of the snap pin, the spring pin. It was an extra piece of plastic near the spring pin, which holds the watch band out parallel to the case, and that forces the watch to sit on top of your wrist without rolling around your arm. And so my replacement watch band, it holds the watch under my wrist, but it tends to roll. And I'm rather happy about the fact the watch loses 1 second in about, I think it loses 1 second per week, which to me is good enough. Anybody have any further questions or comments on all of the above? K2RIW listening.
Yeah, Dick, what's the model number of the watch that you like? I'm just curious to see what it looks like.
Yeah, you're going to have trouble finding it because it's a discontinued model, and right now the only people who've got it are in Australia. It's a diesel, D-I-S-E-L, model number Delta Zebra dash 1117, 1117. It's sometimes represented as Delta Zebra 1117 without a dash and sometimes with a dash. So it's not easy to find. But it is sold by a company in Australia. And by the way, the company in Australia is called the Diesel Company.
Dick, is that Australia or New Zealand?
You got a darn good question. Now I'm not sure. Huh. Oh. That may explain why I had funny things happening with the conversion between their money and my money. You might be right, John. In other words, when you went there, it was New Zealand. I don't know what made me think it was Australia. KC2WGB, K2RIW, time to correct me.
Well, I'm not sure, but I think that's what I saw. But I'll revisit that site, get all my facts together right. But I think you even mentioned New Zealand the first time you were talking about it, so it doesn't matter as long as you get the right watch.
Yeah, the notice that they sent me said that it's on the way. And so I'd love to know, is it being shipped by slow boat? I mean, when you go through the process of signing up to buy the darn thing, they ask you, do you want to pay $20 for shipment or do you want the shipment for free? no other information is given. And I may have dumbly said, gee, I'd like it for free. Maybe free is...
Repeater, time out.
Maybe free is when they ship it by slow boat. Over here, John.
Yeah, the few things I bought from Australia were kind of strange. I bought a particular radio from them, a receiver, which I had to get permission from the FCC to get because they wouldn't ship it because there were frequencies that weren't allowed. But I finally got that all straightened out. And I received that. But they got some strange rules.
Okay. So it may be New Zealand, but it's a diesel company. Okay. 73, you all. Be kind to each other. I think we're going to be back next week. I'm going to pass it over to Paul and John in that order to tie the ribbons on it. WS2N. By the way, what do we got to look forward to coming up in the next week or so, Paul? WS2N, KQIW.
It's up tomorrow morning. SpaceX will launch the NROL-76 mission, which is the National Reconnaissance Office launch, and that'll be tomorrow morning, probably 7:15, but, you know, possible that they'll launch at 7, and maybe as late as 11 o'clock, most likely 7:15, 7:20, and if you miss that, it'll be on the SpaceX website, so you can bring up SpaceX.com, go to their website, and they'll have it on live at that time, or you can watch it later in the day. And interesting part there is the booster will be coming back to Cape Canaveral to fly out of the sky and come back and land with us. Four landing legs. It's really cool. This 155-foot long, 12-foot diameter thing landing back vertically. Very interesting. That's it. John, over to you. Good to hear you back. KCQWGB, WS2N, 73.
Paul, before we leave you, wait for the beep. Do we know anything about the payload of that launch?
It's the National Reconnaissance Office, so it's all top secret. So you really know nothing. It's probably a spy satellite, probably a tracking data relay type of satellite, probably for the other spy satellites. You know, these are all the probabilities that you read about. Officially, no, we don't know anything. Back to you.
Do you think the payload is big enough to be a Hubble-like thing that can aim at the Earth?
I think it's a communication satellite. I think it's a relay satellite. Going to probably mile-on-off orbit. You know, it's going to have to be able to hang up there 12 to 15 hours of the subject. And then come close to the Earth and then go back far out again. I think it's one of those. This is going on. It looks like around a 60-degree, probably, inclination. So it's coming up north. Back to you.
It sounds like Rich has got some information. KTUPS? Go ahead, Rich.
Just more information on your watch band. I just emailed you a link. I found what is supposedly the factory original band for the DZ-1117, and I think it's on sale in England for $46 and change, but I emailed you the link, so check your inbox and see if you can look at it and see if that's what it is or not.
Well done. Well done, Rich. Thank you. KC2WGB, K2RW, over to you for a final, John.
KC2WGB. Very good, Dick. Well, I'll say 7-3s to everybody, and I know I haven't been on the air much in a couple of months, but I want to thank you for the kind notes and emails and things that I had received, and I hope to be back here next week. But you all have fun and enjoy, especially this hobby. So maybe we'll be all here again next Sunday. Looking forward to it. Really enjoy it. KC2WGB will be clear.
Okay, John. Awful glad you're back. Bye-bye, you all. K2RW clear.
net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL Repeater. Net tonight at 8:30 W2VL Repeater System. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL Repeater.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club Repeater System, node number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club Repeater System, node number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link active.
Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Net tonight at 8:30. W2VL Repeater System. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL Repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
N2EO, N2EO, this is N2MV Mobile.
Net tonight at 8:30, W2VL Repeater System. tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Delta, Papa, Zulu. Checking out reload transmitter, One Island City. Anybody rail for a radio test? That will be off at 8:50. Shuttle out 6, Delta, Papa, Zulu. Just for radio check.